Hi, this is Haishi. Welcome to Cloud Cover Show. Some of you may have noticed that Chris is not here today. And here's the reason. 2 o'clock this morning, he called me. And he mumbled a lot of words. But I only made out four phrases. There was a bowling ball, this kitchen knife, a torch, and something about awesome. So I guess we'll have to wait to Chris to tell us what happened next time he's here. But today, I'm glad to be joined by, I got the name, Narayan Annamalai.
That's right.
Okay,
you got it.
I got it right. Okay. So he will be talking about virtual networks. This is essentially a recap of virtual network features, what you should know about Microsoft Azure Virtual Network, and what kind of hybrid scenarios you can enable using these features. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Narayan Annamalai. I'm a program manager in the virtual network team in Azure. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Haishi, for inviting me. I'm excited to talk about virtual networks and hybrid stuff.
Excellent. So before we jump into the main segment, there's a little news announcement I need to make. If you look at the page behind me, we just announced a D-series virtual machine sizes. This is a new series of VM sizes you can leverage. It has a high memory option. You can go as up as high as 112 memory, and also the CPU speed is faster. It says to be about 60% faster than the A series CPUs. And the moreover, you have a local SSD you can use as a temporary data disk. So this enables to improve I/O performance in a lot of workloads. For instance, you can leverage the SQL 2014 buffer pool extensions to have a read buffer for your SQL database data to improve the performance. So it's a great stuff. You should check it out, and we should have the link below the video. So with that, we'll switch over to Narayan to jump to the main session.
And now, our feature presentation.
Okay, we're back. So Narayan, take it away.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about virtual networks today and hybrid connections. But before I start, you know, this slide just says virtual network right now. And there's a reason before I put the next button here. I want to talk about something, an important aspect of where we are with respect to cloud and the maturity of it. So gone are the days when people were just curious about the cloud. They were trying to test it, to see whether it really works. Deploy a VM here and there, and then use it like their virtual desktop, right? Those days are gone. Right now, people believe in the cloud, which is great, and they're planning to, and they're trying to run their real business workload on the cloud. They're moving their infrastructure and their architecture from the on-premises onto the cloud. This is a very exciting time, and this is what we call as lift and shift. Where they want to take what is running in their on-premises and just move it into the cloud to benefit from the scale and the flexibility and the dynamic nature of what cloud provides to them. And this is a very interesting time for networking because for the most part, networking was an afterthought. You know, a few years back when the cloud was there, like I said, all you needed was a VM, one VM here, one VM there. You didn't need a lot of networking to go behind that to just give one VM. But where we are right now is like, they have everything working in the on-premises, right? The, every customer, they have a big enterprise. They have various elements to it. They have their domain controller. They have their Active Directory services. They have firewalls. They have like intrusion detection and prevention systems. They have a whole set of things that is set up in the on-premises. And when they move to the cloud, they want to take it with them. They want to move that as well. They need this connectivity between their services because their services are interconnected. So they want to have the kind of connectivity into the cloud. They want to have familiar network control that they have in their on-premises in the cloud. And that's the exciting phase we are in right now.
Yeah, I guess it's not only they want to have the local network environment replicated on the cloud, but at the same time, especially for large enterprises, their system is comprised with hundreds of machines. as they migrate, there will be a lot of scenarios that they will have some resources on-premises
Correct.
And some resources
Correct.
On Azure,
Right.
and how they connect
Right.
to each
that's,
other.
That's a great segue into what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So before they actually move everything, lock, stock, and barrel, there is going to be a big transition time, or sometimes certain things will never move to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, you need to provide this hybrid connectivity
Definitely.
So that their network and their infrastructure is still connected. It's extended, but connected.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. And that's actually one of the goals and the main objectives of our team. Azure networking team really works on these two aspects to make sure that the cloud is ready for real enterprise workload from a networking standpoint, and you can provide this hybrid connectivity
mm-hmm.
during this time of transition. Right.
Yeah.
So with that, let me recap what actually virtual network is. Virtual network is not new in Azure. This
mm-hmm.
GA'd actually a year and a half along with the virtual machines, right? But it is very important to state, like, you know, why somebody should use this and what are the core benefits and basics about virtual network. So like I was saying, this is something like, think of this as your virtual branch office in the cloud. So if you have like five different locations that your business is set up in,
mm-hmm.
your sixth location could be a cloud.
Yeah.
And so because it provides you a private and isolated trust boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come into the cloud, you can draw a circle for yourself. Like
mm-hmm.
this is my boundary over here. And then this lets you bring your virtual machines and other services. So you could bring either your web applications like cloud services or your individual virtual machines. You can bring them along and deploy them into this virtual network.
Mm-hmm.
And we give you, or the virtual network gives you, complete control over the IP address management. So the customers can bring their IP addresses, stick it on the VMs just like they would in their on-premises.
Mm-hmm.
And the IPs are sticky. And they're stable, they're persistent. So how many ever times in the cloud, like if your VM moves from one server to the other,
mm-hmm.
the IP doesn't change.
Okay. So actually, I can, on my virtual network, I can set up like domain controllers, DNS servers, and everything.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. So it also lets you bring your DNS server. So if you have a, for especially if you're extending your network,
mm-hmm.
you have some servers on the on-prem, some on the cloud, they all should be connected to the same DNS so that they can do name resolution back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually bring DNS onto the cloud and
mm-hmm.
then use it for all of your network, or you could just point to a DNS that is actually running on the on-premises.
Mm-hmm.
And these machines from here can connect back to the DNS that is actually on the premises.
Yeah.
So these are really the basics of why somebody actually would need a virtual network, and that's actually the recommended best practice is to start with the virtual network.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the next slide here, I'm just kind of going to kind of build how somebody should actually start deploying the services, right? Okay, Microsoft Azure, that's like a cloud to them, right? It's a big vacuum or open space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's, okay, they want to move to the cloud, how do they start? First they do is they pick a region that they want to actually go into.
Mm-hmm.
We have like 13 regions where Azure is actually there. So you pick a region, and then you create another box. This box is just for yourself. This call is the customer's virtual network, right? This is actually in a regional scope. So this
mm-hmm.
is on the US West or US East, whatever it is. So once you create that, the next step is for you to actually call out your different subnets. Because if you look at it on-premises, you generally have DMZ zones, you have your front-end machines sitting in one place, you have your load balancers in another place, so it's fairly isolated,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's exactly what the virtual network actually gives you here. You can segregate this into different subnets, you know, draw four different boxes. And on the front-end subnet, deploy your web servers. This
mm-hmm.
could be an IaaS virtual machine, or it could be a cloud service, like the PaaS cloud service that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Deploy it over there. Deploy other things. You can bring Linux and then put this on one of these subnets.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring your DNS server on one of the other subnets.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring Active Directory on one of the subnets. Now, here's the best thing. All of these are connected
yeah.
through an isolated and a private channel. So if you're not putting them in the network, they're all like fairly isolated services which can't talk to each other on the private IP address. They can only communicate on public IP address.
Yeah.
By putting them into this kind of a casing, into
mm-hmm.
a trust boundary,
mm-hmm.
you get this benefit.
Okay.
Right?
And so. You just mentioned the point there. So on the same virtual network, not only you can put virtual machines on it, but you can also join the cloud service. And I understand that the websites to the virtual network as
yes.
well, right?
Yes. So websites is not directly inside the virtual network, but there is
okay.
a way to connect your virtual
to
network
connect
to
the virtual
network.
Okay.
Website. Actually, the new announcement, I think, could be coming. But what we have is, like you said, infrastructure services like individual virtual machines
mm-hmm.
and PaaS, cloud services, can be put in the same virtual network
mm-hmm.
and they can communicate to each other through private IPs. And this is, think about where this will be really useful, right? People usually build their front end
mm-hmm.
using PaaS services,
mm-hmm.
like, but their back end, like SQL,
mm-hmm.
is usually IaaS machines.
Yeah.
So SQL Server always on actually is a replica of three SQL Server machines.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are three IaaS machines.
Mm-hmm.
These two can be in the same virtual network. And that's one thing I'm going to talk about more today, is one of the scenarios that a virtual network actually enables using SQL always on. I'll
nice.
Talk about that. But this is how the act is set up. And now, if you want to expose some of these to the internet, right, and not all of them, then you have a choice. Only on the front end servers, you can put a load balancer on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can be an external load balancer that only connects to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So your way into the virtual network can only be into the front end subnets,
mm-hmm.
onto the web servers. And the rest of these VMs can actually stay fairly private and isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And this, when the receives the request from the web, this can then send it to the other machines behind the screen, but that can be all private and it can only expose some subnets to the internet.
Okay.
So that's typically how we recommend customers to use virtual networks.
Yeah. And the public access point is so-called the public endpoint.
Yes, that is called the public input endpoint,
okay.
Which actually you can secure that by using some ACLs, access control list.
Mm-hmm.
So by default, it is open to the public,
mm-hmm.
but you could put some ACL rules over there to say, like, if you only want to allow some trusted IPs, or if you want to deny some IPs, you could still do that as well. So that's also there. So this is typically how we view it. And this is a network with just cloud, not on-premises yet.
Mm-hmm.
And in my slides later, I'll show you how the on-premises come and joins with this. So another important thing I want to actually talk about today, this is fairly new, in fact. Like four or 5 months ago, we said the scope of the virtual network is expanding to a region,
mm-hmm.
right? So what was it before then? So before that, it was actually a scale unit. So you were talking about this D series. Actually, it's a good comparison here. So Azure's data centers, actually, are kind of categorized into different scale units. Certain hardware types can offer certain VM sizes. Like if you have like small, extra small, medium,
mm-hmm.
Those are called A1, A2, A3 today.
Mm-hmm.
They can be offered in one particular scale unit. But if you want like the A8 or A9 machines, which are like InfiniBand, and then like the D-series machine, which are like really like bigger machines,
mm-hmm.
they're in a different hardware pool, right? And these are called different scale units. And the virtual network, unfortunately, was actually tied to a particular scale unit. So if you created a virtual network like, you know, a year and a half ago when we announced GA,
mm-hmm.
those were only tied to a particular scale unit.
Yeah.
So they were not able to use different VM sizes in the same virtual network.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as of last May, we said like the virtual network is right now a regional scoped, not a scale unit scoped. So which means, like I'm showing here, it could expand across multiple scale units. So you could have like multiple different VM sizes in the same virtual network. It could have like a small and an A9 VM both in the same VNet, you know,
mm-hmm.
Having the same connectivity that they actually have. So that's one thing. And this is actually the change. If you're looking at like the network configuration file, this is what like customers were doing by specifying an affinity group. That's what actually refers to a scale unit
mm-hmm.
In the network configuration file. This is actually a description of a virtual network. All right, so like I was showing, here is the virtual network's outer space. They can bring that space to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
They have different subnets here. They have a DNS reference over here. And this was tied to a scale unit, right? But now they can actually tie that to a location, US North or US South, and they could have pretty much the same thing, but tied to a regional scope.
Yep, nice.
So
yep.
that's one thing. So the other thing, which I'm actually very excited to announce, is the capability to load balance, right? So we have been only doing like public load balancing,
mm-hmm.
or like you said, these endpoints are exposed to the internet.
Yeah.
This is great for like front ends, web front ends, that needs to get traffic from outside.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of other internal services and applications that need to be like more private, like your database. Right?
Yeah.
For high availability, you do a database replica of
mm-hmm.
like three SQL Server machines. And you want one of them to be primary, other to be secondary.
Yep.
So you want to put them into same load balancing set. So that automatic failover can happen. So for such services, you want to put them behind a private load balancer that is not exposed to the public. That's just a more security enhancement on your part. So that's exactly what we do with internal load balancing. With internal load balancing, the customer has a choice to create an internal load balancing configuration in their deployment and run some backend services behind that. And by the nature of this being internal, the accessibility of this particular load balancer is restricted only within the virtual network. So only other services that are actually deployed in the virtual network can access the internal load balancer. And the good thing is, people who are connected through the on-premises, like through the one of our hybrid options, they can access this from on-premises as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
So you can actually have the on-premise resource and the Azure resource joined together into the same internal load balancer?
Not exactly that,
okay.
So let's say you run a highly available service in the cloud. So you have all your three SQL Server machines on the cloud, right? You can access this particular replica of SQL Server from your on-premises using the private
load balancer.
Yes, using the load balancer, or from different services in the virtual network. So they all have to be in the cloud, but they can be accessed from other places in the cloud or from the on-premises. But by default, it is secure. So it's like, if you're running something that is internal to your corporate network, that's the best way to do, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So you don't want to expose this to the internet. It's only expose it to your corporate network.
Yeah.
That's what this is. And with this, we can actually pick the IP that you want to load balance against. So from your address space, you can select one IP address and say, this is going to be my IP address for my internal load balancer. And that never changes, a sticky IP again. You can register that into your DNS server. And then all of your corporate network right now can use that to actually get to the service. So this is actually generally available. And this actually also supports, as we speak, there'll be announcement before this video probably releases, to have SQL always on, which is a very popular configuration for people who are using SQL services, and ILB, internal load balancer, together. So we're announcing support for that. So that's a pretty useful scenario to
have. Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah. So that. So another interesting thing that I want to talk about is we have interconnected VNets as well. So I did say that the VNets are regional scope now. So you can have a virtual network per region. So typically that's what customers do, right? Like if they are in multiple regions, geo-regions for disaster recovery, they'll create a virtual network in each region they are in. And now we give them an option to connect these virtual networks through our familiar hybrid gateway devices. So they could just deploy a gateway, which again, Azure provides. You don't understand hardware, it's just a VM. So they can deploy these gateways, which are actually marked through this locks over here, and they can attach or join these VNets. So this particular services that is running in this West Europe VNet can directly access the servers running in the East US VNet by using private IPs.
Okay.
Yeah, and this channel will be like completely secure. This is cross-region, so the customers can actually build a global network using the with cloud and hybrid, and even with multiple regions in the cloud.
Yeah, this will be incredibly useful in lots of scenarios. For instance, I'm in contact with a startup. They have 6 person in a startup in 4 different countries. And they want to have all the like a unified office environment. I guess that's how they can construct it.
Correct.
They can use virtual network to connect different locations together.
Correct.
Across the globe.
And yes.
As if they're on the same network.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So with the hybrid connectivity back to the premise, and with this inter-VNet connectivity that you can actually connect different VNets in different regions, you can essentially build this network which is actually global now.
Yeah.
So and once you do this, all these VNets are accessible through internal load balance endpoints as well. Meaning, if there is a SQL Server instance running on this VNet East US, you can put that behind internal load balancer that can be accessed from here, and also from your on-premises network.
Yeah.
But then that will be still secure and not open to the public, but it is open to the entire corporate network through interconnected VNets and through the on-premises.
Yeah.
So that really is actually the benefit of having ILB and interconnected VNets.
Yep.
So next step is I'm going to talk a little bit more about like this hybrid extension, right? So like we talked about, so sometimes some of these things can't move to the cloud, either not immediately, but for some reasons where they want to keep the data more in their on-premises, mm-hmm. they stick it over there. Mm-hmm. And Azure provides multiple different ways in which this on-premises can be connected back to the virtual network, right? So one of these ways which I'm showing here is called point to site. So this is actually really designed for if the customer has a lot of mobile workers with laptops that goes to multiple different sites or outside most of the time, and if they want to access or connect back to the virtual network, they can install something very similar to your VPN client that you actually use to connect back to CorpNet. They can just download that and then provide the credentials and connect directly back into the virtual network. So there is still a same VPN device that Azure provides that will be sitting on the edge of the virtual network, which can then receive connections from different laptops or whatever it is from the customer's on-premises network, and then directly connect back into the virtual network. So using this, they have like full what we call as a layer 3 connectivity, where they can access any of the VMs using private IP, or this laptop can be actually referencing the DNS service running over here. It just, this laptop just becomes the part of the network that can see both the on-premises as well as the virtual network. So that's really designed for more like startups, like you mentioned startups. So they don't, this is actually quite cheap in, because they don't really invest on anything on the on-premise side. They don't have to buy a hardware VPN device. They don't have to buy any kind of circuits. All they do is just download it and then install it and then pay just for the VPN service on the Azure side. So that's one of the options.
So how the client machine authenticate to the network?
Yeah, so which is called as SSTP. So there's something called as a pre-shared key. So once you're actually creating this gateway on the virtual network, it generates a secret key or a passphrase that actually you should be supplying when you're actually connecting from your laptop. Okay. So it's very similar to our passwords that actually protects us, our PIN or passwords that protects us to connect to the CorpNet. Similarly, you have this kind of this secure key that Azure generates for you that you should use to connect back. And this key can be regenerated at any point in time, so that for security's sake, you can like really don't have to stick to the same key. You can kind of refresh these keys like once in a while, and the connection is secured through that. And this is an IPsec connection. This is the SSTP connection, but the other ones are like IPsec. I'll talk about that in the next slide. So the next stage, for some enterprises and businesses that are slightly larger, which they don't really want to connect every single time from a laptop. They want one connection that can actually serve none of their VMs or their entire network. They can invest in something called as the site-to-site VPN connection. So this is actually the customer site, and they go and buy a hardware VPN device. Or they can even try a software VPN device in Windows Server 2012. But the popular hardware VPN devices that we support are listed in our website. You know, there's a lot of Cisco devices, Juniper devices, which they can buy. And they can pretty much set it up the same way, which is, again, they go to the virtual network, create a gateway there, generate a passphrase, which is a secure key right now. They come back and stick it in this VPN device, and they establish this secure tunnel. Now this is IPsec, so this uses like IQv2, key exchange algorithm, to secure this connections to the VNet and the on-premises. And once this is done, any VMs or servers behind this VPN device in the on-premise can connect back to the virtual network. So any VM over here can connect to any VM over there. And even if you grow your network, as long as you're putting it in the same address space that Azure knows about, you can connect.
Yeah, this is useful in actually one of the scenarios I'm working on. The customer has a large number of devices on the on-premise network, but those devices are concealed appliance. You cannot make any changes. You can't put VPN software on it. So for that, I guess they will use this site-to-site connection so that they can join all those devices to to the network.
Yes. And the good thing about this is like it works both ways, where if you want to extend it, even your virtual network or your on-premises network, mm-hmm. as long as it's in the same address space, and even if not, you can do an update to your virtual network address space. Mm-hmm. You can increase your address space, and then start deploying new VMs, and they automatically become discoverable from this end. So this is really a permanent solution where, like, once you set it up, mm-hmm. it is there. You don't really have to touch it. You can take, and the other thing that we do is, this gateway, even though, like, going back to this picture, even though we show like a single circle, mm-hmm. we have two VMs there mm-hmm. For failover.
I see.
So that's why it's like highly available. So even if this connection had to go down, because this particular VM in Azure goes down, immediately the backup will pick it up, mm-hmm. become the primary, and establish the connection back.
Okay. So do we provide the SRA for the connectivity?
Yes, we do have SLAs. It's published in the website. It's 99.95 for 99% of the customers. So we have that. it is protected behind an SLA. Mm-hmm. And this is actually not new as well. This is more like a recap here, because this has been there like for ever since Virtual Network went GA, mm-hmm. which is more like a year and a half. So this is kind of used by a lot of customers. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of those stable things that is actually out there.
And if I have site-to-site VPN set up, can I mix point-to-site with site-to-site together?
Yes. So good question, but there are some nuances to it.
Okay.
There is two different types of gateways, actually, that you can have in the virtual network. Mm-hmm. One is called static gateway, other is called dynamic gateway. Mm-hmm. So if you get a dynamic gateway, mm-hmm. then that actually can serve both a point-to-site and a site-to-site connection on your on-premises. So you could have both, mm-hmm. right? The static gateways are basically, it's more about routing. The word static is because the routes are more static mm-hmm. in a static gateway. And that is still supported because, like, certain hardware devices, mm-hmm. The older ones, only support static routing. So that's why we still have static routing gateways. Like ASA 5515, something like that. So like some of the Cisco devices mm-hmm. support still the older versions of static gateway, and that's why we have that. But if you get a dynamic gateway, mm-hmm. then yes, what you're saying is correct. So we could use it for both point to site and for site to site.
I see.
Yeah. So using this, like, you can do the same thing. You can domain join your VMs, because like you could all these VMs over here could be domain joined. All these VMs in the virtual network can also be domain joined. The domain controller can be running either on the on-premises or on the virtual network. So it doesn't really matter. So at this point in time, your network is just extended. Mm-hmm. So it has exactly the same property. So this VM accessing this VM is very similar to accessing a VM on the cloud. That's what we actually try to build. Yeah. The next one is actually our third option. This is new. Fairly new, and this is not for everyone also. This is actually what the diagram shows here is like, what we have today, mm-hmm. the connectivity is through public internet.
Yeah.
Meaning, these two VPN devices that is there here have a public IP address, and that's how they discover each other, and that's how they connect with each other. So in effect, your traffic is going through the public internet channel. Mm-hmm. And that's why, even though you asked about SLA, our SLA is more about on availability mm-hmm. of how available our gateway is going to be, but not on the latency or the bandwidth, because that is subjected to internet for the most of the time.
Yeah, there are gazillion things could happen.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of things that could happen, because especially if your data center or if your on-premises is somewhere in Asia, mm-hmm. and then you're connecting to in Europe, in your virtual network, mm-hmm. it has to travel through the Atlantic, right? There is really no SLA on that. But for some enterprise customers, mm-hmm. that becomes important, where they want to connect to Azure in a more private and more private way, so to speak, or more a dedicated way, so mm-hmm. to speak. Mm-hmm. They want to avoid the public internet. They want to connect into Azure directly. And that's when we have this WAN solutions, where we actually work. We have two options there, right? One is through another partner, which is a peering exchange location. We call them as a co-location provider. Mm-hmm. So these are actually people like Equinix, who have like leased space in like big hotels, literally, and they run wires mm-hmm. to connect multiple different enterprises. So they have, so like Microsoft can actually meet Equinix in one of the locations in Seattle, and lot of other companies can also meet Equinix in Seattle, you know, in their co-location provider. And then what they could do is they could actually connect these two networks.
Okay.
So we use a third party to kind of directly connect networks. And that's called more like the peering location. We do peering based on a co-location, right?
So basically, they have a dedicated connection to Azure, and they have a dedicated connection to the customer. Then the two connections meet there.
That's exactly. Yeah. So they have dedicated connection not just to Azure, to the entire Microsoft network.
Nice.
Right?
Oh, okay.
And the same thing, they have the connection directly to the other side of the customer's network as well. For now, though, we are only letting them use the virtual network in Azure. But in future, they could actually use this for more things than just Azure. But what this is actually bringing together is like two companies are kind of connected through this co-location provider. That's what this is, right? That's one option. There's another option using MPLS. Because most of the networks are provided by big telco providers like AT&T. So you could, if your company is using AT&T, that happens to be the same provider with Microsoft, you know, AT&T again, you could actually work with AT&T. They have a thing called NetBond or provisioning methodology by which they can connect these two networks through MPLS. So that doesn't have to then go through another third-party location, but that's just through the provider, telco provider. It's fairly connected. So these kind of channels then are not going to the public internet. They are completely private. So obviously they have a better bandwidth. They have less latency. And this is really for like enterprise solutions where they push a lot of data to Azure or they have a lot of transactions to Azure. This is great.
And I guess for the connectivity providers like AT&T, they will have some kind of SRA to guarantee the connectivity.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. So the customer really actually needs to have an agreement with AT&T on what circuit they're buying, how much they can push, and what is the charge for that. So, and also to Microsoft for other, using the service. So that's how it really works. It's through the either the co-location provider or through the telco provider, which is like AT&T. So yeah, that's our other option. To connect back to Azure. So I think I pretty much covered various different options here on connecting back to the hybrid cloud. And we are working on delivering the vision of, like I said, this cloud being the platform, or the Azure being the cloud platform that can actually completely virtualize your network. So it'll provide you ways to bring whatever you have in your on-premises in the future, like your devices, your routing table, your firewall, all of that can actually come and live in the virtual network. And that's what we're actually working on.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, so and actually, let me go back to the, and then show you how this virtual network actually shows in the portal and what you can do over there to kind of cap it off. In the Azure portal, there's actually, a menu that actually can list all the virtual networks that you actually have. And as you can see here, the location is also called out, like in which location the virtual network is located in. And I'm going to show this SharePoint VNet. So I set up a SharePoint form in the virtual network. And this is one of the good use cases that why people would want to use the virtual network, because this has a lot of things. It has a front end. It has a back end database. And I'm using internal load balancer. To serve my backend DBs. So it's secure by default. It's not exposed to outside world. And the way I go about doing this is, if you look at my configuration, I do have like various different, I do bring my DNS servers. So these are my DNS servers that are deployed in the cloud, right? So as you can see, the DNS servers have like private IP addresses because these are machines running in my virtual network. So these are IPs I gave them, right? And I do have, other subnets over here, like my web subnet, my application subnet, my data subnet, and my DNS subnet. So as if you have noticed correctly, the DNS servers are having IP address from this particular subnet, the DNS subnet. And every VM over here in the app or web or data, it is usually using this DNS server for their DNS services. So they point back to this DNS server. So And I do also have a gateway, right, for connecting back to the my on-prem and other VNets.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back to this dashboard, it will actually show you the SharePoint VNet actually can connect to another VNet. This is the interconnected VNet thing. It's not running right now because I've stopped it. But once this is running, this can actually connect back to another VNet over here, and the UI will kind of show you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have like a DNS server. It kind of paints you a picture of what network that you actually have here. So, and you can also list, see if all the services that is in this virtual network. And as you can see, all of them have a private IP address that mm-hmm. actually I gave it in different subnets. So this is a way to kind of organize your deployments on the cloud.
Yeah, this is really straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, for a non-IT person, this is easily understandable.
Yes, it's understandable. Yep. So that's pretty much what I wanted to give an idea and overview of.
Great. Yeah, I think that this is a great recap of Microsoft Azure Virtual Networks. If you're new to Azure, this is definitely an episode that introduces you every options that Virtual Networks provides.
Yep.
And if you haven't refreshed your Virtual Network knowledge,
yep.
this is a good recap of what we've done in the past year
yep.
as well.
Yeah. And in the MSDN pages, we have actually documented like mm-hmm. different scenarios and different setup that customer may need
mm-hmm.
To walk them through, like you know, to even decide for them if they need a hybrid connectivity or if they need a virtual network. They can kind of walk through that and they can understand.
Okay.
So.
And we will put the link under the video as well.
Sure.
So do you have a Twitter handle that you want to share with our audience in case they have some questions?
The best way is to get through the blogs. We have the Azure Networking
okay.
blog,
mm-hmm.
and I have posted like two blogs, one on regional virtual networks, one on like internal load balancing,
mm-hmm.
and before this video probably releases, I have another blog on SQL Always On with ILB, and so it's very easy for them to reach me through that, and,
okay.
and I'll right. provide the links for those.
All right.
So you could share it on this video so that.
Great. So thank
great.
You. This
sure,
is great.
Sure.
And this is it for today's show. I guess next time we will see Chris coming back and tell us what he did this morning. Thank you.
Tell me that story as well.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Bye.